Meanwhile, the Browns quarterback competition has not even played out yet. We're already talking about Arch Manning coming to save the franchise. That's when you know you can't pick a quarterback worth a dang because everyone's always looking for the next guy for you. Hey,
that's the amazing thing about all the drama when they drafted Dillon Gabriel, the Browns, in the third round and Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round and traded from 2 to 5 to get a pick next year from the Jags. They're all in on next year's quarterback class, and yet we're paying this much attention to their rookie quarterback class. Make it make sense, Maggie.
Well, I can't, except for the fact that, you know, it looks a little like star hunting, if you will, because, you know, I like this idea that, you know, for the Browns, a Shedeur Sanders just fell into their lap. No, they made a calculated decision once it did get to day three that they were going to trade up and they were going to actually go and get him. I know it wasn't trading up like the Giants did to get back into the first round for Jackson Dart, but they did eventually set their sights on him and made that trade with Seattle, you know, late picks, 166 to 144, whatever it was, to go up and get Shedeur. So there was like it's not like they were on the clock and Shedeur was there.
It wasn't an arbitrary, hey, he's here, let's just take him.
Yeah, like, let's not pretend they were throwing darts at the dartboard. So, you know, that's kind of insulting to them. So I think it's because they're taking the flyer on Shedeur. By the way, Dillon Gabriel, pretty famous in his own right, played in some huge college games, has played college forever. So we're familiar with him. And now Arch Manning, you know, this would just be so Browns. You know, because they can't really get quarterbacks to come there unless either they pay them so exorbitantly, like Deshaun Watson got $230 million while he was being, you know, investigated for all those improprieties with all those massage therapists, or they get the number one pick.
Well, yeah, but you know what's funny? Actually, if you think about it, they had, Baker was the number one pick, but generally they had this weird habit of taking this quarterbacks at 21. Did they have that run of 21s? They had Brandon Whedon, Johnny Manziel, and Brady Quinn, they all took in the 20s. So they tried to be fair to the franchise, they tried to get him in the second half of the first round, and that didn't work either.
Okay, so they've failed in every single possible way you can try to get a quarterback on your roster. And so, yeah, of course, people would say, well, if anyone's going to save the Browns, it's going to now have to be Arch Manning, because it definitely wasn't Deshaun Watson. So anyway, here's what we're talking about. Jimmy Haslam is the owner of the Browns. Not a great owner, because the team's not very good. So you're going to be judged by that. And he has a connection, though, to the Mannings because of a University of Tennessee connection. So he's got a thought on Arch.
Arch Manning.
Well, Tony, you know, you're in the business and you get paid by how many hits you get, okay? And I think if you know the Manning family, I would bet that, and I don't know Arch at all, okay? I bet he stays in college 2 years, so that's, I don't even think that's worth discussing.
Pearl, this is something you've been consistent about.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Look at the history of the Mannings. Okay.
Well, so he's right. Peyton and Eli stayed 4 years. Peyton could have gone out, almost went. Well, was discussed about going out and came back. And he'd already proven something on the field. We haven't even seen Arch play yet.
That's true. So one of those stories about Peyton Manning all those years ago and why he didn't want to come out in the draft, this is the story that I've always heard was the true story, which is that the Jets had the number one pick, but Bill Parcells was in the building. So this wasn't your normal Jets situation where they're just floundering. Bill Parcells was there to add some, you know, gravitas to the situation. But Bill Parcells, from what I've understood, would not tell the Mannings for sure that he would draft Peyton number one overall. And they didn't like that he was playing coy about that and would not solidly, definitively say, we are drafting you number one. And I think that was Parcells being Bill Parcells. And that was part of the reason he went back to college. Could have just been because the Jets are the Jets. Can I bring something up, though, that is unique to Arch Manning that Peyton Manning wasn't dealing with or that Eli Manning wasn't dealing with? It's one thing if your brother has a career-ending injury. That is horrible. And I'm talking about Cooper Manning now, right? It's one thing if he had spinal stenosis, which is a narrowing of the spine that in the worst possible cases can cause paralysis. It can end your athletic career, obviously. It's one thing if your brother is going through that and you feel like, you know, you watched him lose, you know, his football career, but obviously Cooper's rebounded to be successful in so many other ways. It's different when it's your dad. And Arch Manning had some comments about this at the SEC media days about how he, watching his father have that career-ending injury and then see his uncles go on to be these massive stars and winning 4 Super Bowls between them and all the MVPs, has taught him, you know, you've got to take every opportunity. You can't take anything for granted, and you have to really be grateful for everything you have in the moment that you have it, because he watched how his dad, well, he didn't watch, but he understands that his dad's career ended. If Arch Manning can be the number one pick after this year, you can't leave that on the table. And I think the family psychology and history, like, not to be armchair on them, but because of his father's career-ending injury, nothing is promised. And I think that would be a motivator to me to get to the NFL, especially if you're going to be the number one pick.
So why wasn't he in a rush to get on the field in college then?
Well, how could he? I mean, he had Quinn Ewers in front of him. I don't know if they...
He could have left. Everybody else. So, right, like, he seemed like in no rush in college.
Well, maybe he felt like he still wanted to develop. There's another thing about Arch.
Well, which could be, by the way, still be true after this season.
It could be, but you know what? To be the number one overall pick, whether it's at the Browns or anywhere else, I think that's going to be too tempting to turn down.
Yeah.
Whether it's, and it could be a couple situations. It could be the Browns as the number one pick. We've talked a lot about the Rams and Sean McVay. Is there something that could be appealing about sitting behind Matthew Stafford if they could pull something like that off to learn from him while Stafford is still active? I don't know, but you know, that Cooper Manning injury always lingered in the back of my mind. How does that impact your son? You know, it's one thing if it's your brother, it's another if it's your dad.
But he wasn't around for that.
No, but to know his career disintegrated over something was not his fault.
He is, it's a different calculus for Arch than anyone we've ever seen before. He is richer than any the draft prospect in the history of the game. I mean, obviously, because nobody got paid until 2 years ago.
Sure.
And he's getting paid more than anyone. He reportedly $6.5 million, and I'd probably be more by the time he gets to the draft. So he's already got millions in the bank. And if you're sitting there and you're Arch Manning, that's a really good point about the psychology and all, but you have a chance to go back to Texas. Let's assume he doesn't win a title this year. Safe assumption, right? You pick the field over Texas.
Of course.
Would you rather, you already have millions and millions, you're already financially set for life. Would you rather go back to Texas with a coach you love and a team you love and try to win a national title, or go to Cleveland or New Orleans?
Listen, I get it. I understand, but there is an appeal to the pros, you know, and there is an appeal to maybe not the Browns so much.
What?
But New Orleans, you understand the appeal. And I get the cupboard's bare right now, and it's not awesome, but it is his hometown.
I don't know if he would go there. Honestly, Kobe didn't want to go to Philadelphia, Kobe Bryant. So I don't know. I just think that the logic behind him staying, also, there's so many people around him who keep saying he wants to do 2 years. Like, that can't be. It feels like the Manning family is putting out the messaging pretty consistently, hey, we want him here for 2 years. I mean, it could be wrong. I thought Cooper Flagg was going back because there were rumors that Cooper Flagg was signing this massive NIL deal to stay at Duke. Didn't happen. But, yeah.
You were the only person who thought Cooper Flagg was coming back,
I'll tell you, there was a lot going on with Cooper Flagg.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
He's in Dallas now, so he landed.
Show you the reports on Cooper Flagg going back. Like, there was a big rumor that Cooper Flagg was going to go back to Duke and sign a $20 million deal with all these people. But anyway, I mean, you might be right, but I think that'd be crazy for him at this young. He's also young. He's, 21 now? He just turned 21. So he's going to be 22, and there's no guarantee. I would not go to Cleveland, New Orleans if he really just hang out at college. That's like his dad did. Like, he could have come out as a junior, too. There's no reason to unless he feels it's the perfect situation.
So I think you're right to look at the history and all of that, and we're kind of predicting because Jimmy Haslam said yesterday, you know, the owner of the Browns, that he thinks that Arch Manning is going to stay for 2 years because of the Manning family. But this is a different calculus. I think when your dad had a career-ending injury and his football career was cut short, and you're growing up with that. Again, it's very different than, you know, when it was Peyton and Eli watching their brother go through that. I think it is different when it's your father. And the thing about the money, I think you have to be playing for something more than money. Like, I don't think that Arch would have even gotten to the point he is now at Texas playing high-level FBS football if he's only playing for the love of money, right? You have to love the game. And this is why the great players, I don't know if Arch is going to be great, but the motivation has to come from somewhere else besides the money. And I think it does for him. I think he wants to be and follow in the footsteps of all these great, of his family. But here's the other thing about Arch. You're saying you shouldn't go to Cleveland, you shouldn't go to New Orleans. He also doesn't have to go to one of those places, right? He can be the number one pick like Eli Manning was.
Right.
And Eli didn't go to San Diego.
Right, but he went within the top four.
Okay, fine. But we don't know who's going to land in the top four. Let's figure this out. Like,
I mean, we have an idea.
Okay.
Same teams are usually up there every year.
You know the projections, but sometimes, you know, you even talked about, is Carolina a good spot for him? Like, there could be a spot that's like a blank, more of a blank slate. I didn't agree with you at the time about the Carolina thing, but we don't know what they're looking for. But it doesn't necessarily have to be the number one pick and he just goes there. The Mannings could play hardball and get him from anywhere from whoever's picking sixth overall to one, I believe.
Right, but you're going to have, I mean, the odds are, if you look at the odds, you know who the six teams are going to be, right? Like, nobody was surprised, massively surprised by anybody in the top five this year. We knew probably Cleveland without Deshaun was going to be in there.
I'm just saying not all teams picking in the top six are necessarily dire situations. Like, Cleveland is not a good situation. I wouldn't allow my kid to play there. New Orleans looks really bad right now, but there is the personal connection. So maybe he's, you know, the thing that, the catalyst that turns this around. Not all teams picking at the top are necessarily terrible and going to be terrible forever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just like the Colts with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning went there. I mean,
that was a horrible situation.
And look at what he did.
Yeah, I know, but good point. But still, look at the teams at the bottom of the odds. The Saints are a mess. The Browns are a disaster. The Jets are the most futile team in pro sports. The Giants are right behind them. The Titans have a quarterback. Then you got the Colts, Raiders. I mean, the Raiders haven't won a single thing in 20 years. It's going to be, they're not going to be ideal situations. That's the way the draft works.
But that's never going to be ideal, right?
I mean, look at Caleb Williams. Like we said, like, oh man, he's going to be stuck with the Bears who can't develop a quarterback. And guess what's happening? They're having a massive problem developing Caleb Williams.
You know what, though? That's going to happen whether it's this year or whether it's next year, right? If he comes out, if Arch Manning decides to leave college after this upcoming season and knows he's the number one pick, or if it's 2 years from now, it's still going to be a bad team. It's still going to be a slew of bad teams at the top of the draft. That's what you hope, that a quarterback changes your fortunes, turns you around, finally gets you on the right track.
You know, Arch is coming out.
What's that? Oh, is that
Arch is coming out. Arch is coming out.
I saw pictures of him at the SEC Media Day.
Yeah.
He looks like a 19-year-old kid rushing a fraternity.
They all look like that.
Not
it's
like
the
Arch.
Way they all wear their hair these days. It's like a mop of hair on their head. Everyone's wearing their hair long.
Actually, it's funny. Drew Aller does look like that, too. But no, Arch looks like a baby. The way he was, his outfit, like a blue blazer and a tie that someone helped him tie. He looks like a little kid. So I don't know that he's in any rush. Besides, the other thing, too, is we haven't seen him play at all, so who knows? Like, he might not be... Yeah, I don't feel like this is... I kind of agree with Hasselbeck. This is not an obvious tank year. Next year, the year after that, I would definitely tank. This year, I would be very careful about tanking because there are some good projections, but I keep hearing Arch and this incredible quarterback class. That's a big unknown to just lose 16 games for, isn't it? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, everyone knew he was coming out, so that was easy. Like, and I think Andrew Luck was a senior. So why? What if you tank and there's no one there?
Listen, I don't know if the Browns are going to need to tank. You know, I don't think it's might not have to be a conscious thing. Kenny Pickett's already dealing with a hamstring injury. You know, Flacco's 40 in year 17. You know, their schedule is absolutely brutal. The Saints are just a mess. So I don't know if you need to necessarily be like trying to lose. You might just lose a lot of games.
But if you assume Joe Flacco stayed healthy and you played him all season, that's not a strong tank move.
That could be a 4-win team.
Yeah, four-win. Will that get you number one?
It's going to get you close enough. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. And then, you know, if you've won two or three games and all of a sudden it's late December, okay, well, now you start really sitting guys. You very aggressively sit guys. And you make that decision at the end. But to me, I would not rule out that Arch would come to the NFL draft after this year. And furthermore, if he is projected to be the number one overall pick, you got to do it. You got to come out.
If you're Arch.
Why? If you're Arch. Again, because you watched, well, you didn't watch, but you understand what happened to your dad. And I think that that's going to play a big part of this. And, you know, you're going to manipulate the draft only as much as you can manipulate it, whether it's 2026 draft or 2027 when you're the Mannings.
Yeah, but also, too, what about winning in college? It seems like a big deal to him.
I mean, Peyton and Eli didn't win in college.
Yeah, they wanted to. Peyton, that Tennessee team, like, God, Peyton was all so upset that he couldn't win with that team. Now, Eli never even came close. He chose Ole Miss. But, I think Arch, just the fact that he stayed 2 years at Texas, like, why? Why'd you stay? Unless they do it this year. If he wins a title, all bets are off. But I just, like, none of the things you said are consistent with him just quietly sitting behind Quinn Ewers and not leaving. He could have gone anywhere. Should have gone to Alabama.
I thought he should have gone to USC. Go with the quarterback kingmaker, Lincoln Riley. The problem is you might get killed, and you also are probably not going to be playing for anything.
I think Austin's really fun, too, and I think he's having a great time. And yeah, I think he's a little kid. Like to go, I personally, you couldn't pry me out of University of Texas to go to the Browns or the Saints next year.
888-710-4ISN. You can let us know what you think about Arch Manning. We also have Jimmy Haslam talking about Shador Sanders. That guy, also with a famous father and a famous family. What did he say about his role in selecting Shador in the fifth round? And who's going to wear it for the Browns if this quarterback situation just gets worse and worse and worse? We've got that for you today. So much to do. It's Maggie and Perloff Show.
He's going to break down that touchdown. Can't hear. Never mind.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Maggie, you know I love a mock draft. I love to look ahead. But even I will admit the Arch Manning number one overall is a little bit funny considering we've seen him play, what was it, Mississippi State that he went to town on, who was basically a JV squad last year.
Yeah, they won two games.
So he's never really played a full game against a really, really good team. We've seen moments of him. Will Texas be number one or two when the first AP poll comes out? So we do have a little thing called the college football season ahead. And now we're trying to put him on the Browns. I would love to take the field if we could do a bet who's the number one pick next year, because I do think like it doesn't feel like Trevor Lawrence. That was the one where everyone knew. There's very few years where you tank. So why would you tank if you don't know if Arch is coming out? And if you don't know how good he is yet. So it's a little bit weird. The year after that, if Arch goes back to college and Lenore Sellers go back to college, then you'll have Dylan Raiola, Arch Manning, Lenore Sellers, DJ Lagway. Then you're a full-on tank. But this year doesn't feel like a tank year to me, Maggie.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that if Arch is going to be the number one overall pick and the Mannings know that, I think you got to come out. Like, you got to go to the draft. And the thing is with the Mannings, it's unique, is that you don't actually have to go to the team that's picking number one, because Eli didn't, and I don't know why Arch would have to. So if you're around one, if you're top five, top six, I think the Mannings have a lot of leverage. Let's go to Jamie, who's in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning. Hey, Perloff, I'm rarely in full agreement with you, but this morning I don't think you couldn't be any more dialed in. We don't know what this kid is. What we do know is about the 2023 group of five-star quarterbacks, the top six. He's the only one that's still at his first school. A couple of them are at their third school. Mm. One of them's at Sacramento State. But on a bigger scheme, you know, bigger picture here as it relates to Arch and Texas, I think what we're looking at is the second coming of Major Applewhite and Chris Sims. Chris Sims was thought to be this legacy, generational talent. He was lucky to get a little bit more than a cup of coffee in the NFL. I personally think that everybody gets a little bit, out over their skis on Arch Manning. He's Cooper's son. He's not Eli or Peyton's son. We really don't know. You look at this, thank you, sir. You look at this group of kids that came out. They were obviously all overrated in a major way. Texas, this is my biggest concern as it relates to Texas. They have both tackles and two interior offensive linemen are replacing. So they're replacing four starters on that offensive line.
Yeah.
They've lost four NFL running backs the last 2 years. All the receivers are new. That he's not coming into. I understand they spent a bunch of money in NIL and all these other things. He's not walking into a ready-made, ready-for-success situation that people are making this out to be. They're just so in love with his name. They're so in love with everything else that they're not looking at this through any realistic way. Now, that's the way Texas football operates, so that's only going to get more intense and worse on him. And I think that this is going to be a massive disappointment. I don't see him as a runner that people think he is just because he had one run against Mississippi State. And I don't see that great of instincts as a passer. Now,
he's not even a starter, though. How do you know that? Do we have a big enough sample size for that? He started two games, right? I mean, Jamie, I get it. You want to fade Arch Manning in Texas? Totally understand. Has the hype gotten way too much? Absolutely. But you know, it's not like the cupboard's totally bare. He still has Sark. It's going to be creative. It's going to look a certain way. And, you know, here's the thing about Arch that maybe no one wants to talk about. There may be an NFL team that will take him number one or close to it, even if he doesn't have this wildly successful college career. Because look at Eli. It's not like Eli was, you know, a Heisman front runner or anything like that. And he still went number one overall, and they had to manipulate the draft there. So,
hey, Jamie,
like, I think yes. The last name's going to take him pretty far.
I'm dying to know, yes, who are the other quarterbacks in that class? I assume that's probably Malachi Nelson, who's at Sacramento State.
You got Malachi Nelson, who's wherever he's, yeah. I think that's a kid at Sacramento State. You got Jaden Rashida, who's went from Arizona State to Georgia, wherever he's at now. You got Jackson Arnold, who's went from Oklahoma to Auburn as a massive disappointment. You got, I think, Aiden Childs is the only one. He may still be. No. Dante Moore has left UCLA. He's
at Oregon
now.
Yeah.
You know, so
Jamie,
to what you're saying,
but
you
Jamie,
know,
let me ask you got a first hand view of Quinn Ewers, who was coming out of high school a surefire number one overall pick. Like there's, and like he went in the seventh round. So I'm on Team Jamie here. There's a TBD about.
Okay, but
Arch.
Quinn Ewers also went to, you know, was also playing in multiple college football playoffs and getting to the Final Four.
Right, and he went in the seventh round of the draft.
Well, I'm just saying, that was also because of injury, I would think.
No, it wasn't because of injury. It was because that kid was made out to be something way more than he was as a junior in high school, and then he was an early winner in the NIL deal. He skips his senior year, and he peaked very early. I went to the Arkansas-Texas game. I watched Quinn Ewers live last year. That is not a live arm. That is not an NFL arm. That's a college quarterback at best, and that goes to the fact that Arch Manning couldn't stand out and literally jump that guy on the depth chart, regardless of your feelings, regardless of this, regardless of that.
Yeah.
Two FCS quarterbacks went in the draft higher than Quinn Ewers. He was the 14th quarterback selected by the NFL. He will get a cup of tea, and he'll be in the UFL really quickly, and that's just the facts. Just like, you know, every single Texas quarterback turns out to be a bust. You can't name me a single Texas quarterback that's ever gotten to the NFL and turned out to be what we thought he was going to be. As soon as Chris Johnson, the wheels came off, Vince Young was, hey, this guy can't even play. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's just the way it works with all things orange. And I'm a Razorback, so of course I'm always going to feel like, that way.
It's either Oklahoma or Arkansas. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Pig suey.
Wait, Jamie, last question for you. What did you just get from the drive-thru? Where are you?
No, I was dropping off a friend at the airport. Now, hey, listen,
nice
one quick thing on a different subject. I know you guys haven't touched on it, but maybe I just didn't listen to it. Maybe you did it yesterday. In regards to the Luka Doncic article in Men's Health.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to get to it.
Listen, this guy, he's of all the things they say, right, are true. He's petulant. He's a little selfish. He's this. He's that. He's wired a certain way, okay? But he's also got a little bit of that Tom Brady, like, you understand, you know, you think I'm a white guy, you think this. Anything, this is a boulder that he's going to carry on his shoulder. Hmm. And he is going to destroy people next year because he looks like he did when he came into the league as a 19 to 20-year-old, and people couldn't believe what they were dealing with.
Yeah.
And that's what you're going to see next year. Now, whether or not LeBron folds into that and his passive-aggressive nature allows him to respect, you know, the fact that there's a changing of the guard taking place, and whether the Lakers have actually, you know, addressed any defensive liabilities that they had major, that's the case. But I promise you, on the offensive end, it's going to be a show next year. You guys have a great day.
Jamie, okay, so a lot to unpack there. We are going to get to Luka in a moment because we're wondering, is this just a revenge bod, if you will, because of how Dallas shipped him out and basically blamed the hookah and beer and him not being committed to his body as one of the sole reasons. Is he just getting revenge on that narrative, or is this a brand new Luka that's been unlocked, like Jamie seems to think? So we're going to get to that. But as for the question about why Arch could never beat out Quinn Ewers, listen, it's fair. It's a fair question. Now, I don't know why at one point in the season they were using Arch for a lot of goal line packages and stuff like that, and then that just stopped. It was like someone turned off a faucet. So I don't know what was going on last year with Ewers and why Sark was so loyal to Ewers.
Well, I got to tell you, Jamie had the bona fides. Like, there's no doubt, because you know what was most impressive to me about that call was that he knew the correct name of the Spring League. He's like,
the
he's going to
go
the UFL. I had to Google it. I'm like, what kind of that is? He's on point right there to know the UFL. Yeah, I mean, you and we all know, everybody who follows the sport knows why Quinn Ewers was going to be number one overall. It was the mullet. Come out as a high school star with a massive dyed blonde mullet, you are guaranteed to be the number one pick. If he had kept that hair, I think it'd be a much different narrative.
Wow. But, ironically, yeah. He cut the hair because he thought it didn't make him look serious enough.
Yeah. Big mistake.
That call is why I love college football, because you can be literally driving your Uber, dropping people at the airport and being like, Texas still sucks.
You look at this. Thank you, sir.
I don't know what the 2023 draft class had to do with it, but I like the flex of knowing all these guys transferred multiple
times.
Well,
I think his point was just, hype alone, like,
yeah, but some of the guys
anything.
Are better, like in a better spot. Like Dante Moore's in a better spot. Well, now. Not all of those things followed the right track.
But everyone he named, that class was so hyped and then really bombed. Yeah. Even Dante Moore is not what people thought he was going to be.
No, but I mean, he just upgraded.
I know, but still, like, he's definitely, I would say that his trajectory is not what we expected coming out of high school as the number one guy.
Let's get to Bogish. He's got the latest and greatest. Good morning, Bogues.
Guys, good morning. Your headlines are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Adult toy. It is fair to say that we would not lead with last night's Valkyrie's Dream WNBA game under normal circumstances, but these are not normal circumstances.
Hayes gets blocked by Maya Caldwell. Something flies on the court, actually, from the crowd. The officials will say they will continue play as that goes off the fingertips of the Valkyries. But that needs to be addressed.
And when it was addressed, live toy on TV.
And no one's picked the object up yet. You guys, oh my gosh, okay. Okay. Inappropriate.
Oh no.
Get him out of here, whoever it is.
Oh, inappropriate's a word
God,
to
if
use.
I had a body part anyone wanted to see.
Yeah, this was a neon green adult toy. Mm-hmm. Adult toy. A replica of a certain body part that is not Maggie's feet. And it was thrown from the stands and bounced through the court and along the sideline. Was nestled under a seat when the was first put on television.
Ooh, panics.
Yeah. There were some giggles. There was some surprise. There was a little bit of, hey, that was dangerous from the players on the court.
Dangerous?
But yeah.
Wow.
Maggie, yeah, I mean, you could have been hit by it or tripped over it or stepped on it and twisted an ankle.
Maggie should be the expert on this
one,
right?
Yeah, this is a Bills Mafia thing.
Yeah, I was just saying,
they used to throw these at Tom Brady all the time.
Yeah.
Feels a little different when you're throwing it at women. Going to be honest, love it.
Where did the tradition come from for the Bills? I was just wondering.
And also,
I was going to say.
Why do they jump through flaming tables? Yeah. I mean, they just do it because.
I think it was in the same brainstorming session as jumping off the table.
It seemed
off the RV to the table.
Go Bills. Oh, okay. It seemed quite specific for the Bills fan. I thought there was some backstory. There's nothing except
Is there
Bills
a surplus
mafia?
In the area? And they're like, what should we do with all of these? Let's throw them?
Yeah, it's called
and Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's called alcohol.
Yeah. The surplus is of Molson XXX or
Labatt. I'm Googling now a Google search that I don't really want on my computer, but why do Bills fans throw blank.
You can go ahead and search it. I never knew that there was a motivation except for, of course, like, because he's beaten the Bills so many times. There's no other retribution. You can't get it on the field, so you might as well try to embarrass him. I don't love this. I hope this doesn't catch on for the WNBA. This feels very different to me. I don't know.
Is there an E in that word? Anyone know?
No.
In the plural version, maybe?
In the plural version?
I would just throw an S on the end.
I don't know.
Well, it ends with an O, so...
We were very certain about that, Bogues.
Grammar would tell you.
Well, they only threw one on the floors. That's why you were talking about one.
Mm. No, but for the Bills, that was multiple.
Yes,
I was at a game when this happened.
At a Bills game?
No. At a food and basketball game. It was on, I think, ESPN2.
Nice.
And
someone threw a sex toy out on the court
and threw it with skill because it landed dead center of the lane while people were lining up to shoot free throws.
Big meat. Well, they probably should have signed whoever threw that because sometimes Fortin has trouble scoring.
And one of the broom towel kids was the first person to it.
Oh, no.
And a ref had to come and snatch it away from him so he didn't fully pick it up. So that was a good time.
Sometimes the kids at basketball games, especially college games, sometimes those kids are like 9.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been touching it, looking at it, knowing what it was. Yeah. And I heard the shot, by the way, you took there.
I'm sorry. I watched the games. Sometimes it's trouble on the offensive end.
I did find a guide on how to carry said apparatus to a Bills game, how to get it in.
In your pants.
Yeah.
Girl, you got it.
Well, you know,
you need to be sneaky.
Strike that from the record. Let's stay hard.
I don't know.
Else are you going to put it in a necklace? Like,
you going to carry it in your pants? What?
I thought you put it in. You don't think
that would be obvious?
Well, you don't. You can tilt it in a way where it's not.
You guys are pretty baggy, Pearl.
I don't know. I've just had this. I think that might look even a little weird. Maybe I thought your bag or something, but
no, there's
you're like, well, of course you carried it in your pants. Everyone knows how to sneak that toy into a Bills game.
Come to think about it, I never thought, how would you sneak that in? Because it's got to be pretty big if you're going to get the effect that you want of it being seen on TV.
I'll send you the link.
No. Don't send me the link.
By the way, this was a full game. They continued playing after a while, and Golden State won at 77-75 in Atlanta.
Whoop.
Angel Reese returned from missing 2 games with a back issue, had 22 points, 13 rebounds, but the Sky lost their 6th in a row, 103-86 to the Mystics. Trey Hendrickson expected to report to Bengals camp today, ending his holdout, but without an extension. Hendrickson reportedly doing this as a good faith gesture in those negotiations. The Detroit Tigers, apparently good at baseball again.
3-2. Swinging the fly ball, right field. Deep, got a chance. Gone! Zach McKinstry with number 9. 2-run shot, 3rd home run of the inning, 7-2 Tigers in the 5th.
That's Dan Dickerson on Tigers radio. As he said, 3 homers in a 6-run 5th. Detroit running away for a 12-2 W over Arizona. They've won 3 straight after a 1-12 slump. Diamondbacks third baseman Eugenio Suarez did not play that game, but an MRI and a CT scan showed no break in a finger after getting hit by a pitch 2 nights ago. So he presumably is still available ahead of tomorrow afternoon's trade deadline. So is Marlins ace Sandy Alcantara. 5 scoreless for him last night. Miami a 5-0 win in St. Louis. The Astros snapped their 5-game skid, 7-4 over Washington, and the Red Sox outscored the Twins 8-5. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thanks so much. Coming up, apparently everyone in their feelings about what's going on with Micah Parsons' contract. We've got the latest next. MMP.
Deeper.
Welcome back to the Maggie and Perloff Show. That sound means time for the Cowboy Quickie. And Pearl, I know you've already soured on all contract negotiation talk, but this one is worth an update.
I don't want to be used.
No.
I don't want to be used by this contract. because now every contract negotiation has to be public, especially the one I know you're about to get into.
Well, I mean, I think we want to bring this to our audience because there actually does feel like there's a significant update in the Micah Parsons v. Cowboys brouhaha. Here's
Michael
Adam Schefter.
Parson.
Adam Schefter on his podcast talking about how the Cowboys and Parsons are nowhere close to coming to a deal.
I would say right now we're nowhere on that deal. I would say right now, Ty, we are further away from a deal in late July, early August than we were in late March, early April. The two sides have gone backwards, not forwards. I don't think they're speaking very much these days, if at all.
Okay, so he's talking to Ty Schmidt from the Pat McAfee Show. So further away as we're getting closer to the season.
What?
Doesn't generally work like that. Now, things are getting personal, and everyone's getting in their feelings. It's a little bit of a longer clip, but it's worth playing for you. Let me hear cut 10, please, Manny. Adam Schefter saying both sides, Micah Parsons and the Cowboys, are upset with each other over how these negotiations have gone.
It sounds like Dallas is upset with the fact that it felt like it was getting closer to a deal, and then that deal went sideways. And I think Micah Parsons feels like this deal should have been done, and we hear Dallas making all these comments. You heard Jerry come out the first day of camp, say the things that he did, talk about guys getting hurt, and it's not always worth it, and sometimes it's better off to wait. I don't think Micah is real happy with them. I don't think they're real happy with him.
Yeah, you know, when guys always say in these contracts, Pearl, it's not personal, it's just business. Well, Schefter kind of implying that it actually is getting kind of personal and that the feelings are getting involved.
Well, I think I know what happened. I think that Micah and Jerry talked. It was on camera all over the place, and they agreed to something. And then Jerry went on the on camera and said, I don't know Micah's agent's name. And David Mulugeta, his agent, who drives the hardest bargain probably in the NFL, I would say, because he did the Deshaun Watson deal, he's the closest thing there is to Scott Boras in the NFL right now. The MLB agent. Like, he is, does not give teams a bargain. So I think the agent probably got in there and said, you know what, Jerry, that was disrespectful. I'm going to get every penny I can out of the situation. I don't care what you agreed with with Micah. And then because Jerry likes, Jerry, I guess I read, loves to go around the agent and try and negotiate these deals separately.
Sure.
So he thought they were talking, they thought they were on the same page. And obviously the agent was like, no, you're not going to do that. We are going to try and get every penny out of you. And Jerry is frustrated by that.
I don't know his name.
Yeah, I mean, well, then I would ask, like, is this a right move by the agent? Like, is it about the agent's ego because Jerry said he didn't know who he is? Or is it about actually getting what your client wants, which is presumably Micah Parsons already said, like, I would take a more friendly deal. I just want to be out there. Like, at some point, who works for who?
Right, but if you... But Jerry, in any negotiation, isn't the agent going to get you a better deal than the individual?
I would think so, but maybe Micah Parsons, like, not every guy goes after every last penny. Tom Brady, I don't think his agent, Don Yee, is a bad agent because Brady took less. I mean, every guy's a different guy. And I don't know if it's about the ego of the agent. The other part, too, if we're talking about this famous agent who's kind of like the Scott Boras of the NFL or whatever, did Deshaun, I mean, yeah, he's got the $230 million guaranteed, so... He gets the last laugh. He also went to the Browns. I mean, would it have been, I don't know if he would have still gotten hurt if he was somewhere else. And ultimately, he got the money, so maybe who cares? But his reputation has not been resurrected. They've made no headway in terms of the PR of the whole thing. Deshaun Watson's still a pariah to most people, so he hasn't done a lot of image rehab. And to be honest, he's on a team that we're only paying attention to because Deion's son is on it. So... I don't know. Did he actually do right by his client, Deshaun Watson, there? He did because of the money, but Deshaun is still thought of as a pariah.
He got the greatest contract in the history of sport. A contract so impactful that the NFL basically had to collude to make sure it didn't happen again.
Not basically. They did collude.
Yeah, he got Deshaun Watson coming off a massive suspension, $222 million. I mean, the craziest
contract. Well, he didn't get suspended until after he signed it.
I would say, yes, he's... That was the best deal an agent has ever negotiated.
Okay. I mean, but Deshaun's career is probably
over. I mean, he might have gotten hurt anywhere.
Yeah, he might have gotten hurt everywhere, but he also hasn't done a lot of image rehab. But maybe they don't care because you're $230 million richer. But you always say, when are you going to spend that money? How are you going to spend it? Are you really that much better off? Deshaun Watson, $230 million guaranteed, $200 guaranteed. It's not my money. I'm not trying to count someone else's, but... I don't know. You're rich beyond your wildest imagination, no matter what.
But let's be real. How do you define an NFL agent? Like, what is the NFL agent's job? It's not necessarily image rehab. It's how do I get you the best contract? I mean, that would feel more like a marketing guy anyway. Like, the agents are really just about the contracts, right?
I don't know. That's your cowboy quick. I just wonder if he's helping his guy here, you know? Micah's going to get what he's going to get, right?
It could be Jerry, too. Like, that's the thing about these public negotiations. We don't really know what both sides are offering.
No, but you're saying that you think that Mulugeta, the agent, got an ego, like a swipe to his ego when Jerry said he didn't know who he is. You're supposed to... That it shouldn't be about you.
Bit of a theory, but I do think... I generally think if Jerry was going straight to Micah Parsons, that was probably a deal that favored the Cowboys. I would think that just structurally, I think Jerry thought he had a really team-friendly, in his mind, team-friendly deal. And I'll bet you the agent, and it's not just David Mukwege, any agent be like, sure, hey, I want to protect my client. I want to get more years. That's often what the sticking point is. And I think that it probably is a pretty natural contract thing. But the fact that Jerry would try and go around the agent, to me, I would be suspicious of the owner in that case.
No doubt. But like, did anyone think Tom Brady was a patsy because he took less, or that he was some kind of like weak negotiator, or that he was, you know, Micah Parsons had said similar things to Brady. You know, I want to get paid, but I also want to make sure that there's money for other people and to be on a good team. I think we all kind of praise Micah Parsons for that. I'm not saying he should get, you know, screwed over, that he should, you know, lay down and let the Joneses walk all over him. Not even close. But again, is there a, it seemed like there was a framework of a deal that Parsons was comfortable with. So
yeah, but I
why mess it up?
I would just say the devil's in the details. We sure don't really know what's in that contract. There's so much money at stake. And again, it seems like every issue, every time I read about Trey Hendrickson or Terry McLaurin or all these contract issues, the player wants one more year.
Sure.
And the team is like, well, or the player wants something. So, you know, it's big money. We're talking, he's going to be the highest paid non-quarterback. So I can see there being enough gray area where they would argue about it. The funny thing is, he's going to sign this deal a week before camp.
Yep.
We all know it. And we're all going to rip
before the season.
And we're all going to rip the Cowboys for overspending.
You know, the ripping the Cowboys for overspending already happened because
yeah,
they could have signed him so much earlier. And I know Stephen Jones was on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas yesterday saying, you know, pushing back on the idea that they dragged their feet on these negotiations. Like, that's fine. You can say that, but the evidence would tell you otherwise.
Well, now they're saying, we tried. We thought we had it done. We yeah gave him a good offer. So they're trying to put it on the player here. That's why I feel like...
two Dak Prescott incidences. Yeah. We have CeeDee Lamb. Yeah. We've got Ezekiel Elliott. Like, there's other ways that they've dragged their feet.
Right. But I'm saying they're trying to come out here, maybe through Schefter, saying, hey, we thought we had a deal done. We thought we had a good offer. We didn't try to drag our feet. This is on the player. That's why it's so hard to tell. And are you surprised at all that Jerry and Micah Parsons, I'd say Jerry is the most public owner
yeah
in the sense that he says everything to the media. I'd say Micah Parsons might be the most public player. Nobody loves a mic more than Micah Parsons.
So,
no pun intended.
Yeah.
Michael Parsons.
You know the show Quarterback on Netflix?
Yeah.
And they also did a spinoff they called Receiver. Remember that?
Yeah.
Why aren't we doing pass rusher?
You know? Oh, it'd be amazing. Those guys are crazy.
I mean, I just wonder, does Parsons, like, is his, I hate this word, but like his content, like, is it already promised to somebody else? Like, does he have a thing there? Because I'd like to see Micah Parsons.
Yeah, who else?
I think Miles Garrett.
See some dinosaur activity?
I mean, why not? There's some fun pass rushers. Maybe TJ Watt might be a little,
well, I don't know.
Boring, but
JJ Watt was fascinating on Hard Knocks. In there.
I mean, they're making Kirk Cousins look interesting. Like, the power's in the post-production, everyone.
No, you need a contrast. You need a colorful guy and a less colorful guy.
You need Nick Bosa?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Bosa is quiet, right? Isn't that?
How about Joey Bosa?
No,
his brother TJ. He's the man.
The Bosa's, remember in the George Kittle thing when Nick Bosa showed up at his house? He's like, oh my God, Nick Bosa's out at night? What is going on here? Did someone die? It was... Max Crosby obviously be a no-brainer. He'd be amazing.
Yes.
I'm looking at the list. There are probably some personalities. You know who's really fun? I've been watching a lot. Brian Burns on the Giants is an incredible personality.
This dude, he calls himself Spider-Man, right?
Or EJ? Kayvon Thibodeau also maybe could be a...
He's always been
Kayvon would be good.
He's a great character.
Oh, quite a character.
Aiden Hutchins is already in like a million commercials. I mean...
I think we need pass rusher here before we need
pass
another skill position.
I think you're onto something. I mean, listen, any position be fun. I'm sure that the linebackers are
next on
all
Netflix.
Personality.
Guard.
I was going to say fullbacks.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
My favorite
punters.
My favorite part of the Joe Burrow quarterback show was when he was sitting around with his offensive lineman and somebody brought up a fact and they have a human encyclopedia. Ted Karras is apparently a genius.
Mm.
So you could ask the guard anything and he answers it. O-line, that's for me, the nerds. They're always the ones with the high GPAs, famously, is the O-line.
Yeah, they always help the college teams get their GPAs up.
So,
also, they're always the ones eating, although I guess that's the D-line, too.
Maybe we could we ourselves could put together a long snapper documentary.
I mean, those guys have got to be interesting, right?
Remember The Magician?
You look at this, thank you, sir.